Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, Conversation for Exploration. Timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. And we are back, and we're going to continue this hour with Red Elk. Red Elk, do we have Red Elk?
Yes, you do.
Hello, my brother.
Hello, sister. How are you today?
I'm good,
or
thanks.
Tonight? Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm prepared for some lively adventure here. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to tell us about.
Well, let's see. We can go all over the board if you like.
Tell us about the Hayoka first.
Well, in the world of first off, let me explain to the listening audience. A shaman, or word shaman, is a white man's word for just about anything in medicine man, witchcraft, or witch doctor. It would include those of Lapland and Russia and Japan and, you know, that are into this type of thing. And they are all over our world. So when I use the word shaman, if I use it, I'm referring to medicine men. And medicine men in general fall down into, well, in general, fall down to two groups, the good and the bad. And the bad we call sorcerers, and the Indians do call them sorcerers. We call them bad medicine men or bad medicine people. We call them witches. We got a number of names for them. And they're bad. I mean, they are bad. They're darn good at what they do. They're bad. And they are as traditional as a traditional medicine man is of our North American continent and South American continent, by the way.
Actually, all over the world, isn't it a shaman a specific role in a society or a tribe? And the role was to be the interface between the other world and this world?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. But you could go to a bad medicine person and get a hex or medicine or something like that to take care of an enemy.
Okay.
And they dealt in that, and they still do. But the majority of traditionalists, it's all traditionalists, who are not bad medicine men, are good, G-O, and then parentheses, O, parentheses D, if you want God medicine people. They won't do anything wrong. I mean, oh, sure, yeah, we'll screw up. We all do, you know. But somebody comes to me or one of the traditionalists says, I want a problem for Joe Blow over there. They won't do it. They just simply will not do it. That is not the way of the Creator. That is not the way of the pale one. And they just won't do it. They're very good. A medicine man, despite what white people think, a medicine man is probably walks a Christian road far better than a Christian does, I'm sorry to say. And then there's those are your two types of medicine people. And on the good side, there are various societies, one of which is Hayoka, which means contrary or backwards. We beat and we go to the beat of a different drummer. We don't do things the way the traditionalists do it. We are considered, from what I understand, all right, I don't know, but from what I understand, we're considered the real top healers in the medicine societies. I would dispute that somewhat myself. I know some others that are not Hayokas that can run circles around me. But nevertheless, I'm not here to in competition with anyone. If people need my help, mm-hmm. and if I've got the time and so forth, and I'm told to do it, then I'll do it. But
you're just giving a little context here in which to understand
the Hayoka and shamans in general.
Okay, yeah. Now, I am of the hidden society, the secret society of Hayokas. That is not the Hayoka society. It is one within that society. And only a very few, probably the oldest, of our American Indian medicine men might have even heard the rumor about us. We remained in what is called and taught, are taught in and teach in what is known as purity. In short, tradition is beautiful. I have a ball with it. I love it, but unnecessary. Bells and whistles, drums and feathers, drums and rattles. It's not necessary. And as I told our brother from Montana, Ron?
Oh, Rod Skinnendore.
Yeah, I'm going to make a lot of enemies tonight. And I just made a bunch right now.
How so?
But, excuse me. But
you were
anyway,
telling
I'm
me
of that society.
Okay.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, you were telling me that the Hayoka Medicine Society, of which you remember, have felt that its secrets need to be told, that the time is now, that the world is ready.
I have been
so how are you creating enemies if you're simply doing what Tommy they want you to do?
Little sister, when you tell a Jewish person to love an Arab and vice versa, that they are actually half brothers and half sisters, one dad, different parents. But when you suggest this to people that kill each other, hate each other, all of a sudden you're against both of them. So you got that group against you. And when you tell a Christian that a medicine man is more Christian than most Christians, you got that group against you. So no matter which way I turn, that's the luck of the draw.
Well, we can leave other groups out of this. But also I want to say that Red Elk's opinions are his opinions, not necessarily reflecting my opinions. So
right. As a matter of fact, if you would allow me, to the listeners out there, do not blame this young lady for bringing me on the air. And in short, if there's any anger, aim it at Red Elk. And I'm dead
You
serious.
Contacted me after all,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But again,
I want to know how you became a medicine man. What tribe did you grow up in? You live in near Spokane. Did you grow up near there? And were you tapped on the shoulder one day? And once you entered the Hayoka, what's the hidden Hayoka, within the Hayoka, how did you become a member of that? Tell us a little bit about that background.
Okay. First off, honey, you got it wrong. I'm not from Spokane.
Oh, you live in your Spokane?
I'm in Thorpe.
Oh,
a little dinky town.
I said near.
Yeah, a little dinky town, 12 and a half miles west of Ellensburg, Washington.
Okay.
Okay. But nevertheless, anyway, what happens is any medicine man, it's a calling, like a calling to be a missionary.
How did your calling manifest itself?
Well, it has to be only one way for all medicine people, men and women. And it requires a certain type of dream at a certain, within a certain age. And my dream came when I was about 8 years old. And my dream was split because I'm a breed. By the way, you asked about my Indian background. I am Blackfoot, French, Shoshone, Irish. And nevertheless, so I'm a breed. And as a breed, my dream was quite different and yet quite the same as most dreams that the people that are called into this field are given. Basically, the dream includes great lightning storms and stuff like that. You understand? Great catastrophic lightning storms and thunderstorms in a dream.
Sounds like the end of the world dreams that another dream researcher was telling us about.
Well, let's get to that real quick. There is not going to be an end of the world yet. That's a little over 1,000 years away. But end of the civilization as we know it is coming up real quick. But anyway, I was given that dream at a very tender age. And then I was given my first lesson at the age of 10. The time began. By the way, at the age of 4... the most respected medicine man of the Yakima Nations, and by the way, greetings from the Yakimas, Kittitas County is literally Yakima land without Yakima claim anymore, but it's ours, theirs. But nevertheless, this Yakima a medicine man. When we lived by the rodeo in Ellensburg, literally right across the street from it. And I don't recall my first year when this happened, but my mother told me it did. But I certainly do recall 2, 3, and 4, believe it or not. But this old gentleman, this old, wonderful old Indian man, only wore a loincloth, moccasins, and a band around his head, and a blanket. That was his clothing. That's all I ever saw him with. And every year, the Indians, the Yakimas, would come to our property and ask my parents, could they camp on some of the land right next to our property that belongs to us? And within a day, 2 days, maybe three, but I don't recall, but 2 days, I would say, on the average, this old gentleman, we all called him Chief, and, you know, everybody calls an Indian Chief, but we in the family, five kids, my mom, dad, we all called him Chief. And he would come to the property, our house, and he would never go up to the door and knock. He would stand and wait until somebody noticed him very politely, and he would have a grouse or a rabbit or two or three of one or the other in his hand. And he would stand and wait. And then one of us kids would run up and tell Mom, Chief's out there. We only saw him once a year when he's going to the rodeo. And Mom would come out and he'd smile at her. He never spoke English. And as far as we knew, he never could. And then, you know, he'd turn and walk to the outhouse. Mom would go in the house, come out with a fresh blanket, and go up and knock on the outhouse door, and the door would crack open, and out would come the loincloth and the old blanket for Mom to wash. In exchange, he'd give her the rabbits or grouse or whatnot. And then he'd sit in there, and until she washed it and wrung them out. She didn't have to hang them up and dry them, even wear them wet, but wrung out. And that was it. And then the old gentleman would come out, and he would always look at me and say something in Indian to my mother that we all got the inference, like, my, how that little boy is growing. Or something like that. Never my brothers or sister, but a brother or sisters, but me. And never understood what he's saying, but that was the inference. You just picked up the thought, if you want. And then he would go into the encampment where the Yakimas had come to prepare for the rodeo. And this is in the days when they didn't come in cars and trucks. They actually came in wagons and on horses and walking. But the last year that I was there, year four, he came down, did his thing, said his thing, looking at me. And then when it was time, and that was it. We'd see, you know, generally we would see him that one time. And when it was time to leave, he was leaving. By the way, when he'd walk into that encampment, it was like the Red Sea had parted. Those Indians laughing, kids and everything, everybody would shut up. And they would part wherever he walked, like the sea. And they would show him the greatest respect, bowing their heads in acknowledgement. Sweet man, sweet man. And, by the way, he'd also kill those things by throwing sticks and stuff. Didn't care bow and arrow. But, nevertheless, this last time at age four, he came back to the house after the encampment was breaking up. This had never happened before. And he looked, and Mom came out quite disturbed, quite worried. My mother hated Indians. She had an absolute hate for Indians. I don't know why, because she was much more so than I was. My grandmother was almost totally Indian, but she hated Indians. But she liked Chief, or at least she respected him. Anyway, the old man stood there, and when Mom came out, he walked up to me amongst all the kids, and he stood at my left, and he put his right hand on my right shoulder, and then he reached up, and he kind of messed up my hair a little bit, and then put his hand back on my shoulder, and he looked at my mother. And I'll never forget his words. I never will. They were English. We didn't know he could speak. He said, one day this boy will grow up and be known as an Indian and do many great things amongst the people. And that was it. And then he walked off. And from that moment on, my mother was afraid to death I'd turn Indian. She didn't know that I had always thought I was. And when we moved to Detroit a few months later, shoot, throughout the years, I would be skipping school. I'd be alongside filthy rivers tracking deer and camping in culverts and stuff like that. But anyway, then at the age of 10, I got my very first lesson. It was to literally, and I told about it in that call-in, to fly, to literally lift up.
Oh, I've got to hear about this. We're going to come right back with Red Elk. He's telling us the story of his calling to be a shaman and one of his first lessons. We'll get that next. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee here on The Laura Lee Show. We're talking with Red Elk. He says he's a member of the Hayoka Medicine Society, and they are wanting their secrets to be known, that the world is ready and in need of some of this information. A quick question before you tell us about your first lesson. Red Elk, you said you had a dream at age 8.
Yes.
And it indicated to you that this was your calling to become
yes.
a shaman. What did you tell anyone at that time? Your mother was a little bit frightened of this prospect, you said, or did you know what it meant at 8 years old? How would you know that? And did things just ensue? It was you're sort of telling us that other members just of the medicine society just kind of knew that you had this dream and things began to unfold, or how did it transpire? And then tell us about your first lesson.
Okay, number one, I know I never told my mother a thing. She detested Indians. I mean, my mother, when at 26, I called her from here to Michigan, told her I was getting married. She didn't say, congratulations, or I'm so happy. She said, and this way, is she Indian? You know, no, I didn't tell my mom a thing. I'm sorry. But the dream at the time, I had no idea what it meant. It was not until later that I found out that that was the calling dream.
Uh-huh.
And I had to have another dream, which I did have about 5 years ago, I suppose. The one that spit me out, if you want, and finished the job. And that's the dream of being eaten and putting back in different pieces. And
oh, that's a classic one.
Oh, yeah. But it's required. These are both required dreams.
Oh, it said it was that kind of death and rebirth theme going on there, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Expression.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, but I tell you, it's quite something to get chewing alive, would you think? And by the way, I was awake during that dream. That was a vision. But nevertheless, anyways, quite a thing to be eaten alive and come back with bits and pieces that are animals, as well as you as a human. You know. But anyway, that's the one that says, "Okay, done, finished. You've been put in the stew pot. You're done. You're ready." And then. You just kind of sit around and wonder what's happening next, and somebody will come to you, and usually a delegation. In this case, I think there was three or four, and told me, by the way, I want you to understand, I am not a Hayoka medicine man. I am of the Hayoka Secret Society of Medicine Men.
Okay?
Now, that's totally, even though it's Hayoka, it is an inner sanctum of the medicine men. But anyway, as for the flying lesson, and by the way, if the people out there are really interested in what I have to say, may I suggest, please, get pencil and paper, because you're going to have to write some things down. I know a lot of people can't afford to get a tape, and I know you're not going to remember it. You remember it for 4 weeks, and then it'll be out the door. And if you can get a tape, if you feel that what I have to say is that important, fine.
Get pen and paper in the meantime.
Yeah. Right. But I'm going to give something very, very, you're going to have to learn this before you can do the things that I'm speaking of. And the things that I'll speak of is how to practice mental telepathy to the point where your girlfriend can be in Australia and you here, and you're making AT&T go broke. If you got some family up there in a space shuttle, chat away. It's free. But God willing, Creator willing, I will be able to teach telepathy, teleportation, talking with nature, going into a tree or a hill, time travel, riding, invisibility, controlling weather, maybe a few other things, maybe not all these things, but I'll give you the basis of it all. And it'll require pencil and paper, so that you have the basis to begin with. And the people will be very surprised at how simple all of these things are. So simple, they're going to doubt it. But it works for me, and it works for those that I teach personally. So it can't be that undoubtful. And let me say this. Don't believe a word I'm telling you. Check it out first.
Always good advice.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know me from beans, my sister, and neither do the listeners. Check it out. And I know a lot of people are going to be running to the Bible and yelling, boy, I get them weekly. Oh, you're a Satan and all that jazz. My gosh, and I tell a person that you can talk to a dog or a cat or a horse and they can talk back, this is ungodly. But there was a jackass that talked to a prophet in the Old Testament, and the things I've done you can do also, even more so, for I'm with you. That's the pale one's teaching right there in the good book called Scripture. But no, you can't get these people to rock from their faith. They're too afraid. Hopefully tonight it'll change some eyes, open some eyes. But, okay, to the flying bit. Basically, and this is a teaching. This is teaching you how to fly. Adults are going to have a real hard time doing it because we live, as the first call that I talked to with Greg, Braden,
mm-hmm.
We live in a world of can'ts. I can't do this. You can't do that. You can't. It can't be done. And that's what you believe. So you're right, it can't be done. And if everybody believed that can't, you would still be walking. You can't break a horse. You can't ride a motorcycle or even go past the speed of 20 miles an hour. You can't have a car. You understand what I mean? People change their minds into the can. And this is going to be required too. So anyway, you're telling us
there's a little mental effort involved here.
Yeah. It's literally unlearning just about everything you learned and getting your mind right. Learn that the only thing that holds you back from doing anything, except the three that I talked about that time, is your own mind on the matter. I can't fly. Bull crap.
Well, we will continue with Red Elk coming up after this news break. We have a couple of hours to spend with him. He says he has a lot to share with us, and he's been directed to share this information. He says we're finally ready for it, and we are listening. Get pen and paper handy. He says you're going to want to write down a few things, and we'll continue just after this with Red Elk. I'm Laura Lee. We will continue with Red Elk this and the next hour. If you're just joining us, he is a member of the Hioka Secret Medicine Society. Did I get that right, Red Elk?
Yeah, hon.
Okay. And he's telling us that he's been taught, and you say that you successfully use telepathy, teleportation, time travel, invisibility, controlling weather, talking to animals, and flying.
And
am I getting that right?
That's just a touch of it, sweetheart.
All right. So I proceed here with an open but not a gaping mind. As you say, don't believe everything you say. Check it out first, and you're going to give us some techniques with which we can test what you're saying.
Right. But let me
get that right? Okay.
That's correct. Let me say this. I just said the word bull crap, and I saw your eyes go up and your head shake type thing.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. All right. But nevertheless, when I was in the Navy, I won a swearing contest between the Australian Navy and the 7th Fleet. So bull crap is pretty light for this guy. So I just wanted to explain that.
I think Howard Stern has been the first to test the 7 supposedly unusable words on radio.
Well, I won't use
have our limits. You know, we want to keep our license for a station. So.
Okay. All right. Anyway, being that we're on the subject of flying, before I go into the thing that I've asked the people to get pencil and paper for, I will finish this off. Basically, if you got your children jumping up and down off the arms of a couch and yelling, wee, wee, I can fly, and you're going to scream your head off, get out of there, you're going to break that furniture, and so on and so forth. You know what, folks? If you left them alone, they're going to fly.
Now, what do you mean by flying?
Flying, getting up, levitating, stop. You can even control, go left, right, up, higher, down, low.
Now, we can do that. I do that in my dreams, but I never
but
really
honey,
considered that you can
physically.
Do this in physically.
Yeah, physically.
All right.
But the thing is children are so easy to train. Right now, hopefully, if we get any IRS return, I want to buy a big trampoline. My wife won't let my grandkids jump up and down on the couch, and they want to learn to fly so bad. It's pathetic. And I have been teaching up until a year and a half ago a 9-year-old boy how to do it. He could get up and he could stay a full, honest to God, 2-second period where you could see him actually hesitate in one spot. But I haven't moved from the area and I haven't seen him since. But nevertheless, what the child is doing is convincing himself or herself, I can fly. I am flying. That's when you get to it. When you believe it so strong, you are, then you will. That's that simple. And everything that I've got to teach you is that simple. But I'll guarantee you, that is not simple for an adult, they have spent their life learning you can't do that. You got to unlearn most of the things that you've learned to do the things that can be done. And we're all capable of these things. All right, now, folks, I'm going to use scripture. And a lot of you people don't go into that at all. And some of you do. A lot of you do, maybe. But it seems to be a book that most people are familiar with in some way, shape, or form. And to compare with the teachings that I'm talking about, I want you to write, if you have your pencil and papers ready, I want you to write body, mind, and spirit.
That's a very familiar concept with us today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've been listening to your show. I thought, wow. Body, mind, and spirit. And under body, write, well, you could write you. You know, Y-O-U. Under mind, write soul. And under spirit, write spirit. I will explain that in a moment. And then, I want you now to write God, well, write it or just remember it. God said he made, let's make man in our image. Well, I don't look like Laura Lee. I'm not even a female. And we don't look like each other, unless we're identical twins. But what did he mean by that? Well, you have Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. All three are God. But there are the three things that God has made, the Creator has made us in his image of. We are three. Now, draw, if you can, draw those paper dolls that you cut out, sis, where you open them up and their hands are all connected.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
They're holding hands.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you fold the paper, you cut it, and you open it up, and there's three or four dolls there, you know, shapes. Anyway, try to draw three close to identical shapes with hand to hand to hand to hand. Three of them connected. And do it, well, okay, the first one on your left, we'll go from left to right, the first one on your left will be called you, Y-O-U, and it will also be called the auto, or automobile, or car if you prefer, and it will have a different name too. It will be called the tonal, T-O-N-E-L. The second one you will call the soul. And that includes, now the mind is not the brain. The mind is every bit of your body, everything that makes it up. That's the mind. The brain just makes it all and gets it all together and sends it out. But the brain is part of the mind. And the mind and the brain is part of the soul. All right. And then the third one, this one that I said called spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Write down Nagual, N-A-G-U-A-L.
Carlos Castaneda's.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely David. Correct. Many of my teachers over the years come from many different areas. And anyway, the Nagual, I understand, is the driver, put down driver of that car that's on the far left. Now, I'm going to try to explain some things. I hope I can do it easily for you. Whether you accept it or not, that's up to you.
We want to hear you out.
Yeah. All right. Your mother is a factory, an automobile factory, and she has built a car called your body, a baby. And that baby is in that womb, in that factory, we're getting all prettied up with a paint job, and we'll call that the soul if you want. You know, looking real good, getting filled up with gasoline, the engine's getting ready to go and all that jazz. And it gets kicked out that chute, out that door, and it parked there. And if the driver of that car is not in that baby, then you're dead. You're born still alive. The driver of that car, then a gal, the spirit, a spirit of God that is in each human being. If the spirit comes in, and it can come in anywhere from conception to the first breath, and it can come back and forth during that time, too. The spirit gets in there, turns on the key, and then everything's connected. You got the driver of the car, you got the car, and you got the soul.
All right.
All right. Now, the driver of the car has got one order. Keep this car on the right road. You do anything and everything possible to do so except one thing. You cannot override its will. We have a glitch in our computers. We can turn left instead of right. We can do bad instead of good. We have that choice. That is
our free will,
our right, yes. And if we didn't have that, we'd just be nothing but robots. That's it, just godly robots. But we were given that right, and the Nagel is a driver of our car. And every time you look in the mirror, you're looking at nothing more than an automobile.
Okay,
now I want you to understand, that's the thing that the Creator said, let's make us in our image. You got Father, Son, Holy Spirit, you got body, your tonal, soul, and Nagel. And there is a way that you can get your tonal mind, your earth brain, in touch with the twin that's in you. That spirit is your twin. Every time you look in the mirror, you look at the spirit too. You don't know it. But anyway, and this is called duality of spirit. This is when you connect the inner God portion of you. And once you learn to connect to that duality in that duality of spirit way, then everything comes easy. Everything. There is nothing you can't do except be God, be Satan, and be Christ. You can be godlike, satanic, or Christian, or Christ-like, but you can't be God, Satan, or Christ. Anything that you imagine, anything you want to do, can be done. Anything. The only thing that's stopping you is number one, will; number two, belief.
Let me ask you this: are you telling me that the shamans that can successfully practice all of these special abilities, we would call them miracles for the most part, because they've achieved this connection of mind, body, spirit?
Yes, good and bad shamans, except the bad shamans connect with the wrong godlike being. Yes.
And we'll come right back with Red Elk. I'm Laura Lee. Let's get back to our conversation with Red Elk. And if you're just joining us, he is a member of the Hayoka Secret Medicine Society. He says he's telling us their secrets that they want you to know. One quick question. Why do the other members feel that this is the time to release these secrets? Apparently, they've guarded them very closely for, what?
Centuries.
Centuries, okay. So why do they feel now is the time?
Because now is the time that a lot of the world is going to disappear, the people in it. The survivors that are left are going to need the seeds of this memory, the seeds of these words, seeds of faith. They're going to need to know how to sit down in a circle or whatever, but connected, and remember what grass smelled like, looked like, felt like, and to create it out of their own mind and make it there and make it real. They're going to need to remember how clean water came from the sky, how it smelt, how fun it was to run in, and they will be able to create it out of that sky. They're going to have to repopulate the earth, not only through children, but through creation and in creation. A little bit here and there will be left through the turmoil that's coming up, but darn little. And it'll be with these people that will pick up this, what I'm teaching, and understand it, and pass it on to others, and those that survive this upcoming time. It will be like going into a yard with a plug of grass, you know, nothing but dirt, and put a plug here, and a plug there, and a plug there, and there. Eventually, that plug will grow and meet all over the earth. And this is what is going to be needed. And this is why it's time to quit calling medicine men the devil and all that and start realizing your potential. We are all basically medicine men in abilities. Here's some things that you don't need to know how to do. It's dangerous for you without the calling. That's our field, period. But the rest of it is free to the world. Actually, if you want to learn how And don't, I'll give you a quick list of books to learn how to get to duality of spirit and stuff. But if that scares people away, get into the Bible and read it. Jesus not only did it, he told you how to do it. Period. But you're taught across the pulpit to rely on the preacher. He's the great one who went to the Bible college. I went to Bible college. I know what we're taught. And I'm sorry. The Creator doesn't need somebody to sit there and interpret his word. If you trust in him, he'll open your eyes. And Jesus literally taught what I'm teaching. And he is the pale one that taught the Indians and brought over 200 years of total peace from up in the Arctic on both sides all the way down into South America. I'm not Mormon either, he was here. And it's that's
why it's
time. Is
that part of your teaching, or is this an opinion? Hmm? Is that part of your teaching?
That's part of the Indian tradition as well as my teaching.
Okay.
But anyway, that's why, honey, because we're in for one heck of a mess. And people are of three thoughts. They're going to have some thing called rapture. By the way, that's not in the Word of God that I can find. Fine, but nevertheless, it does talk about going up.
Okay.
But some say before, some say during, some say after. Personally, I think during. But that's my own personal thing. But the ones that think before and aren't prepared in case it isn't before, they're in deep doo-doo.
you might as well prepare for
the worst.
Widespread belief among Native Americans that various different scenarios have been called for, a widespread belief.
Yes.
Interpretation, okay. The other thing is, let's take some phone calls in just a few minutes here, but could you first tell us, and also you told us the first thing you called up and told us, were wanting to tell us if we had had time then, was that bull roars were a tool for spiritual
healing.
Growth. Okay, for healing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Could you explain that one so we can finally hear that story?
Well, you bring it down to the tune of F, and by the way, that tune is changing as the inner earth is shifting and slowly bringing up. The ball, the core of the earth, has already shifted. And it's like you picking up a long rope and spinning. You spin first. And eventually that next section of rope lifts and on and on and on. And it's the one at the end, the number six earth, us. There's six inner earths, and we're called an inner earth. That's the one that's at the end of the whip, you know, pop the whip. And so we're going to get the worst of it. And now I've lost my train of thought.
Okay, I asked you about, you had mentioned bull roars were healing tool. How?
Anyway, the tone is changing. And basically what a bull roar does is create a vibrational sound and healing. And creation, all creation, is, end result, consummated or whatever, by vibration. We are God's dream. The Bible even tells how whole earth was made, nevertheless.
So you're saying by creating a certain sound that
a certain
is used
sound
as a healing tool?
Yes.
I don't even know what a bull roar is. What is
a bull roar is basically a stick of various lengths, various widths, not very big, that is sharpened along the edges on both sides, strung to a string, a rope, or whatever. In the old days, it was leather strap, you know, leather thing. And they just go around their head, swinging it around their head.
Okay, so it creates a
sound.
Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There you go, a sonic thing.
Okay. Could you tell us quick stories about telepathy, teleportation? I'm taking notes here. Time travel, invisibility,
okay.
Controlling weather, talking to animals. Have you experienced this? Have you done it?
Yeah.
And you're talking about this in telepathy. I have no problem with talking to animals, no problem with controlling weather, okay.
That's no problem. That's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
But you
teleportation,
need...
I don't know about. Time travel, you know, I don't know about that. Invisibility,
I
don't know about that, but, you know.
Well, you know, it really amazes me what the white men have come up with. To go ahead in time or back in time, they call it distant viewing.
Remote viewing.
Even to go over to Russia and spy now. It's still distant viewing. We've always just called it seeing, you know. Mm-hmm. You just do a certain thing in duality of spirit, and off you go. And then it's real easy to go into the past. It's not so easy to go into the future, because the future is full of probables.
Sure.
And right now those probables are down to three and fast coming to totally only one, And I mean, totally two. And that the two is very quickly going down to the one. That's that sky change color is I talked about will show that we're on only one probable. It's not probable.
What sky change color are you talking about?
Well, the Bible talks about the skies will turn to blood, the moon, the sun, the stars. The Indians, they claim it'll be a reddish orange color. And the Indians, we believe that it'll last about 7 days. It might be 8 days. Day and night. A blood-like sky.
And have you noticed how red the skies are looking?
Oh, honey.
We call it because there's a lot of dust kicked up in the atmosphere, and that's how the sunlight goes through and breaks down into the, yeah.
That might be the cause eventually, but what you're seeing is nothing to what you're going to see.
We're going to come back and talk more with Red Elk and take your phone calls. You have some questions, comments? I'm Laura Lee. We are back on the Laura Lee Show and ready to take your phone calls for Red Elk. Bill is in Spokane, Washington, listening to KGA. Hi, Bill.
Good evening. Hello, Red Elk.
Hello, my brother.
Several years ago, I read books by Carlos Castaneda, and I was always interested in things like this, so I'm familiar with techniques like stopping the internal dialogue and learning about...
And it's necessary, too.
And not being self-important, and I find them in the
boy,
Bible.
Is that important?
I'm a Bible reader and believer. I see things where Jesus walked on water, and he had Peter do it. I see where one guy in the Book of Acts traveled through time to a different place.
Yep.
Where objects were teleported, and all these things.
Right. Good for you, boy. Your eyes are open. You aren't wearing cataracts.
I have one question though. When you say the will is the problem, to me, the way Castaneda described the will, there was a keeper of the threshold. You said you always had to get past. And what I've learned in Christianity and in the Bible is that if people let their will go passive, demon spirits enter in.
It can happen.
And I would like for you to comment on that, Red Elk.
Always test the spirit or spirits if there's more than one. The scripture... As a Christian, you should know there's one way to test the spirits. Is Jesus Christ God's only begotten Son? If the spirit wavers, you better really be on your toes. If it says no, then disregard it. Also, are you of, what is it, Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac? You know, is Jacob, Abraham, and Isaac, what was that, I don't know, something...
Well, answer me this question. You're saying that you're coming with the teachings of the secret Hayoka Medicine Society, and yet you're talking to us in very Christian terms. So I'm confused here.
It's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah. So what's the story?
The story is I was taught impurity, and we were taught originally, the original secret society within the Society of Hayokas were taught by the Pale One. And the Pale One was Christ. He was here.
Okay, so are these same kinds of terms and the same source book, the Bible, part of the Hayoka teachings?
Of this particular one, absolutely, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Daryl, Palm Springs, California, KNWZ. Hi, Daryl. You're on with Red Elk.
And hello to your guest.
Hello.
I have a question for you, Red Elk, and that is this. If I understood you correctly a little bit earlier, you talked about, let's go to flying for a moment. You talked about the trilogy that we all have within us, body, mind, and spirit, or body, mind, and soul. And then you said something to the effect that if we could get some kind of fusion is my word, of body, mind, and soul, we could time travel, we could fly. My question is, how do we obtain that kind of fusion? Is it through meditation, or by what process?
You got your pencil and paper?
Well, I've got a pencil and paper in front of me, and I've also got visualization in my
mind,
so I'm ready for it.
Okay, first off, you make sure you have the Bible. Number one.
Are you talking about, the New and Old Testament?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And don't disregard this book.
Okay.
This is the most important one to you. But, I mean, that's top of the list.
All right.
Then, go down there. It's not going to cost you an arm and a leg at all, about $12 a piece. Go down and buy Tom Brown Jr.'s two books by Tom Brown Jr.
The Tracker?
the Tracker and Awakening Spirits.
All right.
Now, he's got several in between that I highly recommend. But Tom Brown Jr.'s teacher also taught me. Came to me two or three times and gave me some teaching. And that will tell you how to connect to duality of spirit, to fusion, in the Indian manner.
All right.
But with diligent searching, with open eyes, and with prayer, asking the Creator to open your eyes and your heart and your mind, you can find it in a Christian manner how to do it. And yes, meditation. Meditate on the things of God. And don't empty your mind and just hope something comes in, because something can come in. And I'll guarantee you it is not always going to be something from God. It might appear that way. That's where you test the spirit. Always test the spirit. Test the spirit of what I'm telling, what I'm saying. Check me. And if I'm wrong, and you think I'm wrong, pray for me.
You're speaking very general terms, though. Do you have any specifics?
On what particular thing?
Fusing mind, body, spirit. Sorry. Daryl, anything else?
I do have one other
Go
thing.
Ahead.
Just a little bit of a concern. Mm-hmm. And to share with your guest, you talked, well, let's get back to flying for a moment. I'm a physician, and you talked about young children. I understand, I believe I understand what you were saying about a person's mental set, a child's mental set. We all have that. And about the inhibitions that we develop about exercising these wonderful possibilities we all have. But if we leave that dangling, so to speak, the children should be encouraged to jump or throw themselves in the air off couches or anything else. I think that statement just requires a little bit of qualification.
Accidents can ensue.
Okay, very good. It's one I haven't caught. But yes, you're correct. Be careful with them around there. You don't want them falling on the coffee table. I want to buy one of the large trampolines so that they can be in the center of it and they can learn not to fear when they fall because they're going to be safe. But if people can't afford it and don't mind bouncing off and down the couch and mom and dad are there to watch them, let them go. Let them enjoy themselves. Protect it. If you need to put something down alongside the couch or something, so if they do fall off,
what is bouncing? I mean, kids like to bounce. It's fun to jump on a trampoline, but
what happens?
What's the lesson here?
You especially children and the adults. You say this flying, you couldn't understand. The thing is, you're told all your life you can't do it. So boy, this is hard to grasp. You're an adult, but children, like the doctor says, haven't got that kind of inhibition. Even Jesus said, you have to have the faith of the mind of a child.
All right.
We are God's dream, and we are made in His image, able to dream. When we are daydreaming, those people and things that we're daydreaming about believe that you and I are God. But all of a sudden, if something distracts us, a good-looking woman or whatnot for a man, you kill off that daydream because all of a sudden you're over there doing that. You know, that new daydream. You killed everybody that thought you were God.
But on the other hand, somebody can remove that belief system. Somebody can say, okay, I think I can fly. It doesn't mean they're going to fly. You're even suggesting first you need to have this fusion of mind, body, and spirit. That's an exercise. Maybe that's a lifetime of work. Maybe you have to have more disciplined spiritual instruction to do that. In all the self-help and the Bernie Siegel education and all of this has been going on the last couple of decades. Now we're getting the picture that the mind, body, and spirit are connected. And as a society, we have a long way to go to really exercise that, to find out the full implications, to find out that it's a three-way street. We can affect, medicine can employ this. Now doctors are teaching prayer, and this is part of the medical school curriculum. So we're coming as a society a long way towards unfolding all of the connections and the implications therein. But it would seem to me that in order to affect levitation at will, a little more instruction is going to have to go on. And this should entail...
Well, hon, you said a trick word when you said, okay, I think I can fly. You'll never fly when you think you can fly. You'll fly when you know you're flying. It's that simple. But it's that hard.
Thank you, Daryl. And let's go next to Max, also in Spokane. Hi, Max.
Hello. Hello, Elder.
Hello, my brother.
I did want to ask some questions.
Go ahead. Tell me. I'll check it out.
Okay, well... I'm just a little brother who's new to the Red Road.
Okay.
And I've been sweating.
Okay. I just finished one a few hours ago for this.
Okay. And I'm curious about the flying aspects. One thing that I've been trying to learn is to climb the smoke.
To what?
To climb the smoke.
What does that mean?
To go into the smoke, be one of the smoke, and climb up as it goes up. Correct?
Yeah.
It can be done. There's only three things you can't do: be God, be Satan, be Christ.
Max, anything else?
I've found some of my spirit guides are frog, owl, and raven.
Okay.
And I've been informed that owl and raven are tricksters, and they're not good.
Well, it depends on what Indian people you're talking to. Most don't like the owl because it's the harbinger of death. Personally, I consider it an honor to have an owl come and tell me someone that I know or even love is in the process of dying or dead. I might be away, way far away, and I'm informed of this. I can get my can home. I already know it. I'm waiting for the phone call, or I've already expected it. To me, there is no bad. It's only how you look at bad. Most Indians won't pick up an owl feather. They won't do it. But shoot, there's no fear to me. There shouldn't be any fear to any Christian, let alone, you know, let alone anyone. You got to realize there's no bad. It's only how you look at it that makes it bad.
Thank you. Bart in Maui, Hawaii. Hi, you're on with Red Elk.
You seem, or Laura Lee seems not to be quite buying the theory of flying and the levitation deal. And I'm just here to tell you
that
it was about a year and a half ago. Me and it was four other girls and one other guy. We did I don't want to go through the whole routine, but where you have somebody lay down and go through a ritual. And this guy was like 250 pounds. And I'm telling you, we were with a bunch of girls.
And you lifted him up.
And we got this guy to levitate. I mean, he was like 3 feet off the ground. And there was no muscular exertion. It was like somebody had us plugged into an energy and was this guy just floated up. And it wasn't until one of the girls kind of freaked out and boom.
And broke the spell.
Yeah, he dropped like a rock.
Were you lifting him? Were you all taking, you know, hands under him and lifting him?
It was two fingers.
Two fingers.
And I'm telling you.
I've done that at slumber parties when I was 12. I mean, it really, I've experienced that too. We need to take a break, but I'd like to ask if anyone else did this and what were these techniques? Because I remember participating in slumber parties when I was 12, 13, 14, around that age. And that's what we would sit around and do and kind of go into a trance, and somebody would take a feather and tickle someone, you know, softly, and it would kind of go into a trance state. We'd all take our hands and put two fingers under them, and there would be like six or eight girls around one person lying prone and kind of lift together. And I just would like to know, has anyone else done this in slumber parties at that age? Because I know a lot of people who have. I'd like to hear your stories. 1-800-800-5287. We'll come right back with Red Elk and your phone calls. I'm Laura Lee. Laura Lee on The Laura Lee Show. I have to tell you, Red Elk is our guest. I have to tell you that I checked in with Sheila during that break. You know, I went to our living room and said to the group of people there, okay, I know somebody here has done this at slumber parties. Sheila confessed that she also, just to confirm, Matt, can we have Sheila's mic up, please? So I just wanted to have another consenting voice that, yes, indeed. See, this winter, I don't know how all the slumber parties around all of America, you know, at that age, is this still happening? Do the 12 and 13 and 14-year-old girls at slumber parties today, are they still doing it?
I think so.
How did they know? Where does this certain wisdom get passed down from slumber party to slumber party? Are the guys doing this? Apparently, our last caller said in Hawaii it's happening.
They're trying that. Sure, when we were girls and doing slumber parties, we would always experiment with this. And, you know, and it was amazing that you could get people levitated. And I don't mean like extremely high up into the air, possibly 4 or 5 inches. And it was with two fingers placed underneath them without even touching the lower part of their back.
And they stayed stiff. That was the other
right,
thing.
Right.
Could you stay stiff and being lifted up in the air constantly if you were trying today? I don't know.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
I haven't done it in a while.
I didn't stay stiff. No, I can move anywhere I want.
Now I can do that in my dream state, but I have. Yeah. But see, you know, like you said, when you become an adult, some of those things you don't do any longer, or you forget how. And it's interesting because I can see my little girl at 4, and she will tell me often things that I just don't recognize or see. She'll be able to say, "Mom, did you see the angel?" And I'm going, "Where, dear?" Or, "Gee, I flew." And I'm going, "Oh, great."
Probably did, huh?
Yes, no doubt. I don't ever question whether she did or not, because I believe that this little spirit and soul can do these things. And as we get older and become, like you said, we let a lot of things as adults bring about...
the I can't.
I can'ts, sure. And when you get into that state, you know, it's hard to move forward. It's hard to do that. So I find it very interesting. And I would be, you know, maybe we should do this after the show. Try to levitate.
Ladies, I want to warn you, though, please, and your listeners. This is nothing I'm teaching you is something to play and show off with.
Right.
Jesus says, you know, you've got enough things that you've seen and heard. I'm not going to sit here and entertain you and play with you. I'll guarantee you that when you do anything in self, other than to learn how to do it, to know you can do it, to help others at some future date, then you're not on the Creator's path. I want to warn you that.
But also, you know, we're testing theories here. You know, we're testing and checking things out, and so it's a process of, you know, trial and error.
It is, but you still have my warning.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, though, and you know, I'm not an expert on this at all, but I think that if you always go with the light of God and you have them in your heart when you are, so to speak, testing things, and you bring in your spirit guides and you bring in the white light and you surround yourself with God, there's a lot of miracles that can happen, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of things that you can do. Not to test God, because we don't need to test him, but perhaps to test ourselves and assure ourselves.
There you go, honey. You got mm-hmm. that right.
Correct. Yep.
And yes, but understand, as you learn the things that I'm talking about, and there's a lot yet to talk about, I don't think we have time.
We have the next hour.
Well, I know, but still, as you learn these things, remember to do this only to learn, so that if the need arises, you know that you can do it. Because you've learned how to do it. You cannot ride a bike unless you get on that bike and learn.
Mm-hmm.
So there's God sees nothing wrong with you learning how. But when you're starting to entertain people and entertain yourself, self gets in the way, and anything of self is not of God.
Correct.
When you're protected, as you're talking about, correct. And by the way, this gentleman and you, sis, talking about your spirit guides and this gentleman with the owl and the frog, these are totems. TOTOMS, and what they are Indian angels. The Indian people didn't know the angels that the Jewish people knew. And God still loves them. They're still his children. And he gave them something that they understood, an angel that came to them as an owl or an insect.
A messenger, in other words.
A messenger.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a very staunch Christian. So am I, by the way, but I'm more free thinking. I've learned a lot of things that she doesn't know, but she is learning. But she was real worried about one of my particular totems, my first one, my main one. She said, "Hun, how do you know that this is not of the demonic area?" And I was kind of floored. And then suddenly, my totem appeared right there in front of me. She didn't see it, but I did.
As a vision.
Walked up to me. Took its great paw. It's a bear. I won't tell you what type. I don't give some of my secrets away. There's reasons for that, too. Took his great paw to his forehead and tilted it back, and lo and behold, the head flew back, hanging onto the back skin, and there was an angelic being grinning at me. And then he just took his paw, flipped the head back over, and I knew the answer.
We're going to come right back with Red Elk. I'm Laura Lee. And we are back, and we're going to continue this hour with Red Elk. Now, here's something, Red Elk, that I'd like to put on the table here. I am, from what you're saying, I'm drawing some parallels. Thank you for pointing this out. I hadn't really thought of this in these terms before, but it's becoming clear to me. You're talking about shamanism and a very long and ancient tradition where there is practiced telepathy, teleportation, time travel, invisibility, controlling weather, talking to animals, flying, among other things. Isn't this interesting that shamanism practices this, accomplishes this, you're telling me? And Christ was well known for some of these same abilities, for healing and for, you know, he was noted for performing miracles outside the normal realm of human abilities, or as we perceive them. You're saying they're normal. I'm saying as we generally had perceived them. So here's a parallel between the abilities of Christ and the abilities of shamans. Interesting. Also, in mythology, you have Hercules possessed of extraordinary strength. Is this another, I'm just wondering, is this another shamanic ability to suddenly possess extraordinary strength? And aren't there examples of humans under extraordinary conditions who can also possess? You hear the story of the mother who sees her child under a car who just gotten run over, and you hear, I don't know if it's apocryphal or if this has happened, if there have been documented cases, but you hear the story of the mother suddenly possessed of extraordinary strength, I think charged by adrenaline, who can lift up a car and drag her child. You hear that. So I'm just finding these parallels interesting. Also, I want to tell you, I've invited back into the studio with us Nick and Sheila, and also Joe Curran. They also have some interesting comments on this, and I want to hear them. But Red Elk, do you want to comment first?
Number one, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the people within my society is concerned, although he never was called it, and it would be sacrilege or whatever to the Christian religion to say it, to us, Jesus Christ was and still is the greatest medicine man, shaman that has ever lived. And he taught us how. And he teaches everybody how, if they just open their eyes and read the Bible and ask God to open their eyes for them. Never mind what you're taught across the pulpit. Grow up spiritually. You're going to need this help. What the heck do you think I'm on here for? All right. Now, that's this other thing I kind of lost on that one. What was that second thing you called? Oh, strength?
Extraordinary strength.
Yeah. We do know about, let's see, there's a medical thing where you get all your body strength up into, you know, a big surge of strength and can lift up a car. But believe me, I've gotten fired for this. They call it laid off. I scared the daylights out of people. When there was a huge stone, huge, I have no idea how big it was. It scared me. Well, it was not as tall as I was. But it had to go well over 300 pounds and somewhere between 3 and 420 pounds. It had to be moved. There was no way to get a machine on it. To move, not a way, because we couldn't get a machine to it. And it had to be moved. And everybody, we had big men. I'm only 5'7½". I'm 55 years old. This happened just about 4 or 3 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I knew that I was the only one that could move that thing. Understand, I knew. I didn't think. You've got to know before you can do it. So what did I do? I spent several hours going past the stone, speaking with it, until finally the stone said to me, "How much do you want me to weigh? How much can you handle?" Quote the rock. And I said, "I think I could get 80 pounds. And then I just left. It didn't say any more. But I knew that in an hour or two, that stone was going to think itself at that weight, while I was going to think myself at the ability to lift more than 80 pounds, 80 pounds safely. When it came time, all these people lined up. I told them they were on a bank, you know, up a little higher than I was, about my chin high, 5'7½". And I told them, "Move back." They were right there, and they laughed. And they said, "Why?" And I said, "Because it's going to hit your feet if you don't move back." Well, they laughed again. I said, "Move back." Well, they moved back about 3 feet. I said, "Get way back." They moved back until they were about 6 feet away. Okay, that's what they want. They asked for it. I picked that stupid 80-pound stone up, lifted it to, you know, I don't know. I got it from the side, lifted it up to my chest with my hands underneath, lifted it up over my head as I was going forward with the motion, and those people had to hit the side of the building to keep from getting their legs broke, and it scared the hell out of them, and I got canned.
One of the big differences that I can see, then, if we can draw this parallel between shamanism and Christianity. I'm sorry, I'm just observing some parallels here. I'm not trying to comment further on this or offend anybody. But if shamans suggest that they can practice this today, then, and Christians, to me, the message seems to be, okay, Christ did it, but nobody else can do it, and that was 2,000 years ago.
You know, but actually, you know, when you look at even biblical scripture, which, you know, I have studied, I have read, and one of the things the Christ said is that greater things ye shall do also, I believe, is the quote.
Amen. You got it on the button.
And, you know, that really speaks to what also it says, you know, most Christians will agree, and I made this statement before, that this time in this age is the end of the age. A lot of people feel that way, at least a transitional period, whatever you envision that to be, whether it's apocalyptic or something much more positive than that. And if that's the case, there's also another scripture that says that in the end times that the churches that exist will have a form of godliness but deny the inner power of it and be spewed from the mouth of God as hypocrites. And when you think about that and you put it in that context, now you start to ask the question, well, what are the churches that we have today, and are they really truly doing the work that the Christ originally came here to do, which was to relieve the suffering and relieve the poor and,
yeah, I call
the
that.
And practice compassion.
And all those things. And intolerance is probably the furthest thing from compassion. You know, and that's a lot of what many of the religious philosophies have become is engaged in following the rules to the point where they're so hypercritical. There's no miracles being manifest within many, many churches. And, you know, if the shaman roots can trace back to that same philosophy that greater things ye shall do also, maybe there is some hope.
Or I am with you.
Yeah, and, you know, we're not alone. However we perceive that, whatever we perceive God to be, and it's I think it's part of figuring ourselves out more than anything else, and what we're capable of and what we can't explain by science yet, because it's still classified as a miracle. Tomorrow will be considered scientific fact, and everybody will laugh and say, oh, of course, we all understand that. Because God doesn't work outside of rules either. He creates the rules and then operates within them. We just have to discover what they are.
What's exciting to me also is to look at the dynamics and some of the core beliefs that are so universal among all these
Absolutely.
Different traditions, different religions, different mythologies. That to me is exciting, that we share so much. You might call it differently, you might put a different spin
right.
on it, but it seems like the core beliefs are pretty similar here.
Well, you know, Laura, last year when we were down in Mexico together,
yeah,
at the
and that was
solstice,
a lovely trip, yes.
That Hunbat's man called up a storm that morning at Zibulchaltun. He's a medicine man, a Mayan medicine man, and out of that beautiful day, right there, just in that micro place. He called up a storm.
Controlling weather.
Yeah.
That's on your list, right out.
It's so darn simple to do, folks. You couldn't believe how simple it is.
Well, also, it's children. I know that we were lifting people up at slumber parties, but also we would sit on a lovely day with a blue sky and lovely little puffy white clouds, and we would breathe the clouds away. My sister and I used to do this. We would say, I want that cloud to disappear, and we'd breathe it, and it would disappear, and we would try this over and over again, did we really do that?
Oh, yes, we sure
did. Did you do that, too?
Oh, I do it all the time with my groups on tour when I get down into the Grand Tetons, and the Grand Tetons are the clouds
You didn't
are
do
down.
That without in Mexico.
Excuse
so
me, lady.
I'd take 40 people and say, okay, come on, let's blow those clouds away. And
ladies,
we do, and it works.
Ladies.
Yes.
Yeah? It is your dream, too. You're made in the same way the Creator made him, with the same abilities, with just those three things you can't do. It's your dream. You can change your life. But the important thing is to not get heady about it. Then you're out of God's will. You're off of his step. Mm-hmm. The important thing is to learn these things for the good of others.
I don't think we have any raging egos here in this room, but thank you for that warning. Because I think the ego is a wily character and something to be guarded against. We're going to come... Oh, Paul, what are you saying? You're giving me a signal. What?
No problem. Whenever you're ready. Whenever you're ready.
He's holding up a telephone. He wants me to go to the telephones. Alice in Sparks, Nevada. Hello. Hello, Alice.
Hello. Your conversation is so delightful, and I, as a 63-year-old woman involved with psychic phenomena since before childhood, is really impressed. And I'd like to ask the Indian shaman if he's ever read the book, The Gathering of the Eagles.
The Gathering of the Eagles, I have heard of it. I have never seen it.
Well, the thing about it is amazing to me, because I lived for 20 years in Spokane, Washington, was that's where I found it. And
is it out of print?
Well, this is what I'm going to tell you. Is in the copyright factor, it says, please copy this and pass it on.
Honey, you got it.
And I
would
did
you
such
do
a
it?
Good job, I don't have a copy anymore.
Mm. Well, actually, Paul, could you go and try to look up The Gathering of the Eagles and see what the status is? Do you know who the author is, Alice?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay.
But it is talking
Paul's
about
try and look
the
it up
Indian
by title.
Shamas.
We'll look it up during the break.
Thank you. And then the other one is The Medicine Wheel by Sun Bear.
Oh, we had Sun Bear on the show before he passed away.
Before he passed away. Well, yeah. I had the fortunate opportunity to meet him. I would like to present an idea on this business of the triangle of
All right.
mind, spirit, and soul, and that is that Christ, as we know him, is the spirit. Jesus was the man. Buddha was also a Christ-like figure, and
yes.
so were some of the shamans. They all had the spirit of knowledge. I've studied all of this.
Which included the spirit of being kind to others, compassion.
Well, also,
Let her
you,
finish that.
You are a child of God also, sir.
Hmm?
You are a child of God also.
That's
long,
right.
long time ago, I had the wonderful opportunity to see a show by Loretta Young, who was a devout Catholic. And her way of handling it was you ask yourself three times who you are, and that'll quickly tell you your interpretation of life. And the conclusion should be, I am first a child of God, and then whatever, I am a woman, I am a mother, I am an old woman now, whatever. But we're all children of God. It's just God is who we put up there. The kids went through the Force with Star Trek, you know.
Thanks, Alice. I appreciate those comments. We need to take a break, and we'll come right back with Red Elk and your phone calls.
Thank you kindly.
And we are back, and we're going to continue with Red Elk. What did you want to say? Then we'll go take some more phone calls.
I was going to say, why don't I just give the very quick lesson on mental telepathy, one of the very easiest things to do.
Okay.
First off, everybody knows it exists because at some point in their life, if they've lived long enough, somebody looked at somebody else and said, let's go get a pizza or beer or whatever, and I was just thinking of that.
Right.
All right. So whether they want to believe it or not, they already know it exists. All right. That's number one. So there's body language, mental telepathy through body language. That is when the wife gets mad at the husband, he knows it. You know, eyes,
body language,
eyes, facial expression. That is telepathy in its own right. Now, then the one that you can learn so easy is frankly, just go to a blank wall with no distractions, you and somebody that you want to learn this with. And one is going to receive, the other is going to send. You're staring side by side at the blank wall. It doesn't have to be shoulder to shoulder, but it doesn't have to be feet apart either. Close. And the one that's sending, image something in your mind that you're going to image, you know, literally make believe so strongly that it's like it's stuck right there on the wall. One lady wrote a book, and I'll use her analogy is the word I want, or her way. Anyway, it was three mountains. Her dad taught her, a medicine man. Three mountains. He imaged three mountains with three peaks, with three snow-topped peaks. He says he got it into his mind. He glued it on the wall mentally, and she was supposed to pick it up. She shut her eyes, and she relaxed, and she says, I see a mountain. Now, that is not totally correct. And he said, okay, what about the mountain? Well, actually, it's three mountains, three peaks. All right, now, what about those peaks? There's snow on them. Okay, you got it. And then the other one changes and becomes a sender, and you the receiver. And believe it or not, this will work, I would say, almost 100% of the time for two times straight, if not maybe three times. But after that, your tonal mind, the brain that belongs to the car, starts saying, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. They're connecting with the things that they aren't supposed to know about. at total love.
Oh, I see. We'll come right back with Red Elk and your phone calls. I'm Laura Lee. Let's take a phone call. Tim in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, everybody. Great show tonight. Geez, I didn't expect fire and brimstone coming from a teepee.
Me either.
Hey, real quick, let me tell you a story.
No, let him finish his comments first. He's been waiting a long time.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I guess truth can come from anywhere. A couple of questions I had. One was, does Red Elk fast to help himself find his spirit guides? And has he read the book Black Elk Speaks?
My name is Red Elk because I was given that name and told I am to Black Elk. Yes, I read the book. Black Elk told of the white man crossing the red man's way, screwing things up.
Right.
I was told I have been given this name to bring the red man way back to show the truth of it to help the white man.
I see.
You understand?
Yeah, I understand, because it was really too late for Black Elk, wasn't it?
No, he was in his right time, and he was giving the right message. I'm in my right time, and I am giving my right message.
I see. Do you fast to help find your spirit guides?
I just finished into my fifth day fast here just about 2 hours ago, and went to the sweat lodge just for this, for my spirit guide. It's not always necessary.
Okay, can I ask one more question?
Go ahead, Tim.
When I was a young child, my father was stricken with cancer, and he was real ill. And we were visiting my grandparents' house, which was a small house up in the mountains all by itself. And I noticed a black pigeon that was outside the boyhood bedroom of my father when he was a boy at that time. Now, I mean, this is in the mountains, in a place where you wouldn't expect a pigeon, no bird feeders, no houses around, just simply forest. And as a young kid, 12 years old, with snow on the ground, I thought to myself, gee, that's such a weird place for a pigeon to be. And, of course, being a boy, I had to make snowballs and try to pelt the pigeon. And the funny thing was, as I look back, I never could hit the pigeon. Even though I had an arm, I felt like Nolan Ryan. Now, it was like reverse magnets. And I kept thinking to myself, am I losing my mind? I can't knock that pigeon off that branch. And I called my mother out of the house, and she saw the black pigeon. Her mouth dropped open. Her eyes got as big as saucers and said, leave the pigeon alone. And later we talked about it, probably 20 years later. I never brought it up since. She thought it was some kind of message. And my father did, in fact, die that week. Could that have been a messenger? I mean, a spirit guide?
Yes. Let me interrupt here just a minute. One of the things that I'd like to teach in the time is just too short. Scriptures talk about omens and signs. Indians, especially the medicine men, and a lot of the regulars that aren't medicine men, but are spiritually in tune, know what to look for in signs and omens. Laura Lee knows that here a couple of weeks ago, three, when I was on, she was going to give me a few days' notice. Things got messed up. I ended up calling her. But I had been told by a sign, a number of signs, eagle, hawk, ox, and falcon, that I would be on that night. And there's a way to learn how to do it, and I'll give that lesson real quick to anybody who wants to learn. If you see something unusual, keep it in your mind, and then watch what happens within the next 24 hours. The next time you see that same unusual event, see if the same thing happens within 24 hours. From there on in, that's the sign for you.
Oh.
Omens are, for instance, omens are considered bad. It's the owl. When an owl hoots, it doesn't mean somebody's dying, although somebody probably is dying. They're all dying around the world, you know. But and a lot of Indians fear the hoot of an owl. They've got the wrong idea. The owl's got the hoot. But, I mean, the dang thing's got the hoot. How's it going to call a sweetie over? You know, all that jazz, or tell everybody this is my place. But if you're thinking of a particular person or group of people, and the owl hoots, or the owl happens to land next to you and look at you, something really strong, guarantee that person is in the process of dying or already dead.
Okay,
you can look at your watch and you can mark it down.
Well, what about the pigeon, though? Because we talked about
the pigeon was a messenger that your pop was gone.
Right.
Your dad's messenger, your dad's medicine totem, your dad's love happened to be a pigeon bird. I don't know why. Did he raise pigeons?
No.
Did he hunt pigeons? Did he watch them?
No. He raced horses and had a fuel oil business.
Uh-huh. So well, there is a connection somehow between the pigeon and him.
Laura Lee on The Laura Lee Show. We're chatting with Red Elk. Also, we have Nick and Sheila Begich and Joe Kern in studio with us. Joan in Minneapolis, you've been waiting a long time. Hello.
Hello. A wonderful show. I would like to ask your guest if he could tell me if he this is what he meant by this incident in my life. Let's see, my daughter was a toddler, about 2 years old. That must be 40 years ago or better. And she backed up off of one step onto a landing, lost her footing, and started rolling down the basement stairs. There are 12 of them. And I ran to the landing, and it seemed like forever I stood there watching. She probably had gone down one more step. And all of a sudden, I took off, I jumped, went the length of those 12 steps, and landed on my knees, and...
In a catching position?
Pardon?
In a catching position?
No, I was on my knees and brought my hands down, and the child bumped on down onto my back. I lifted my arm and caught her so she wouldn't hit the cement, and...
Good work.
And I didn't get a bruise, anything. She got bruises from going down head over tea kettle all the, you know, off of each of the 12 steps. But I thought I probably, you know, on the way down, if the thought crossed my mind, you're going to get broken. And nothing happened to me at all. And I carried her upstairs, and I stood there and looked, and I thought if I'd had one moment's thought, I wouldn't have done that. How did I do that? Is that the kind of power that you were talking about, sort of warning the ladies there, that if you can accomplish these things, don't use them for your amusement, save them for when you'll need them?
Absolutely, hon. You hit it on the head. I'd like to ask you a question of you, my sister. When you landed on your knees, did it hurt?
No.
Okay.
That's right. Okay, you flew, honey.
I flew. Well, I did.
Okay.
I know.
It's nice to know it's there when you need it. Go ahead, Joan, real quick.
I knew that I was flying because I didn't touch a thing on the way. I didn't hit the steps. I didn't hit the sides or the handrail. Mm-hmm. Nothing. I just, it was just like flying. It was.
Oh, that's a lovely story.
I would recommend that you don't do it just for the fun of it.
Oh, I would never. No.
But yes, honey, we are so capable of doing things that are beyond the imagination. Because people say you can't use and do your imagination. But we're dreams. We're God's dream. And we are able to dream. We can create our own dream. By the way, Laura.
Okay.
One stealth train's already passed. The regular one's just gone by.
Also, I want to mention, Red Elk, not too many guests do I ever allow call me honey.
I'm sorry, am I
No, I wasn't offended
hurting?
At all. No, I wasn't offended by all. I just want to mention
way.
That.
I have learned a long time ago on that everybody is my brother and sister. They might not like me, but that's their problem. And when you look at a person and speak to a person as a sister or a brother, that sexual connotation doesn't come in. That is my family.
Right. I wasn't offended at all. You've been delightful tonight, and I want to thank you for...
There's one more book I'd like to make mention, or two.
Sure.
Conscious Dreaming, you have it there.
Oh, yes.
That, throw out any other book. He's got the Bible on that one.
Yes, Robert Moss, yeah.
Okay, and the other one is Urban Shaman by Serge, I think his last name, in a Hawaiian. People want to learn shamanism correctly, safe shamanism.
Okay.
Get it. Well, we're just about dead in the water, aren't we, sis?
I wouldn't call that dead in the water. I'd call this even one more step closer to flying.
Well, I want to talk. I'll say this on the air now. I'll tell you quite a bit more about the Oregon Pyramids.
Oh, the Oregon Pyramids.
Between the three of us.
All right. Thank you for that. I want to say also thank you to Nick and Sheila and Joe Curran. You'll hear about Joe's adventures next week, along with Andrew Collins talking about From Ashes to Angels. I haven't read that book yet, Joe. I've got to do it this week. You have. She says it's spectacular. So does Rand Flameth. He was the first one to tell me about this book. Also, we'll talk with Larry Williams about where Mount Sinai might have been and some of the other adventures that he had in the desert looking for its true location and confirmation of other aspects of that story of the Exodus. Thank you, Red Elk. Thank you all for going on yet another adventure. It's been a fun one tonight. And hope you join us next Saturday night. I'm Laura Lee. This has been Conversation for Exploration, and I want to thank you for joining us on our tour around the universe at large here tonight. And join us next time. I'm Laura Lee.